Hey everyone, welcome to the Matt Report. I'm your host, Matt, and I interview WordPress entrepreneurs, WordPress marketers, bloggers, authors, anyone who's touching WordPress and using it to make a living. I'd like to interview them. And today, I'm delighted to be joined by John Saddington, founder of 8-Bit, chief editor, master supreme of WP Daily. John, welcome to the show.
Thanks, man. Thanks for having me.
Awesome. So let's get right into this. I got a lot of great information I want to pull from you to give back to the audience so that it can help them conquer their WordPress business. Give us the 2-minute warning or elevator pitch, what you're doing, what you're up to with 8-Bit and WP Daily.
Yeah, I guess the very quick and dirty is that I lead an organization, 8-Bit. We have historically been a product company building a WordPress theme and the secondary tertiary markets and engaging the secondary tertiary markets surrounding that particular product. But recently we've ventured into a serious play for content development through WP Daily, which is a news and editorial site. Really one of the first of its kind in a number of ways, where we're covering distinctly automatic and WordPress proper organizations and products. So we really want to focus in on what they're doing, how they're impacting their community, their philosophy, and of course evangelizing that to the rest of the world. We feel distinctly qualified to do that because all of us have been bloggers for a very long time. I guess I'm into my 12th year as a blogger. I started in 2001, so it makes sense that a content company is generated out of people who develop content. So we're having a good time with it. We've got a lot of good response.
That's awesome. And take us back a little bit earlier when you were started out as a blogger and when you were a young entrepreneur before 8-Bit. What were you dabbling in? When did you set your sights onto WordPress to know that that was going to be a business for you?
Probably like most entrepreneurs, I fell into it. Growing up, I didn't really have an idea of what an entrepreneur was. It wasn't really something that I was looking to be. I know I've met countless entrepreneurs who've said that that's what they wanted to do, and they knew distinctly that was where they wanted to head. I had no idea, and to be quite honest, I still don't have really a good idea. But I knew that over time, I realized that there's really no one else that I could work for except myself. Either because I would have significant differences with the organizations that it would hire me, or I just didn't see the same things the same way as they did. And over time that kind of coalesced. But for sure, my entry into WordPress started with content development. I started blogging in 2001. And when I say blogging, what I really mean by that is uploading a HTML file via FTP and hitting upload and then refreshing the page and then seeing my content. I'm not even sure if I kept kind of a reverse hierarchical order to the post. It was just kind of a stream of thoughts. And this was because I was literally just documenting some applications that I was building. I am a software developer historically and by trade. I went to school for some of that. And so I was literally just documenting my thoughts and saying, hey, I think this is kind of cool. I started writing primarily for that, and then that quickly changed because my girlfriend at the time signed me up for Zynga in about 2002, and that's when I first formally engaged with a kind of CMS blogging system. But it was actually back in like 2004 or 5 when I first engaged with WordPress. It was B2, Cafe Log, Matt forked it. And that's when I first heard about it, because I had used actually B2 and B2 Evolution as an actual blogging platform, and had begun actually building some software on top of it. When he forked it, I thought, that's kind of cool. I have no idea. And paid attention to it a little bit, but it was really with the release of 1.5, Strayhorn was the name of the release, where they create an intuitive theming system to the actual core, where I said, this is something I really need to investigate, because I can systematically accelerate the work that I'm doing for some of my clients and even for myself in a way that really wasn't possible. I really didn't catch that vision. And so it was Strayhorn, I think that was 2005, Strayhorn 2005, where I was like, you know what, this is an area that I really want to spend a lot more time in. In terms of entrepreneurship in WordPress, I don't even know if I'm answering your question anymore, but in terms of entrepreneurship in WordPress, what I was able to do was identify a need and a solution. I was actually at my church. I remember this moment distinctly. I was at my church, and I said, started using WordPress, and it was Strayhorn had been released. And I was just talking randomly, maybe in the atrium, about some of the content I had created. And an elderly man overheard it and said, hey, I've heard about this blogging thing, and I think I want one too. I've always, you know, and he went on to express, like many people, I love to write, I love to share my thoughts. And he was progressive enough to know that technology was an avenue through which he could do that. And he said, could you help me set something up like that? And for the first time, I just kind of pieced those things together. I said, here is an opportunity and a need that I can fill. And I could charge this gentleman. I could actually charge this gentleman for setting up a WordPress blog, which would take me like 5 minutes, and make an incredible amount of money in terms of the time spent. So 5 minutes, $100, you know, that's pretty darn good. That's like $2,000 an hour or something. So I was thinking, this is something I could really take much farther. So that's how I got started.
That's a great aha moment yeah. for using WordPress, especially as a business. Fast forward us to now founding 8-Bit. What was that challenge like? I interviewed one of your colleagues, Tom McFarlane, and he talked about it from that developer's angle, from what it's like to join a team that works together to kind of augment each other and kind of bounce ideas off of each other. And it was a great interview to talk about what it's like to work in that team environment. But I always think back to Will Reynolds of Seer, an SEO company out of New York. He said in the early days, and it's like a multi-million dollar company now, you know, like SEO Moz size. Mm. And he always talks, and his early interview was every time he hired someone in the early days, it was just another time he had to go back and eat ramen noodles. Every time he brought on somebody else to the cash flow, it was a step back for him. And every step forward was a step back in terms of financials and stresses of running a business. Did you face that same kind of thing when you founded 8-Bit, or were things a little bit smoother?
Absolutely. I mean, starting an enterprise and a startup is no easy feat. There is a definite distinction between, you know, kind of the model that's been created very often, where you have more of these co-ops, where you have individual contractors coming together to work collectively on like a much larger project. A co-op, you know, per a more standard definition, that's not a startup. It's just a number of people coming together for a set period of time to achieve a set goal on a, you know, on a timeline that has a definitive end. And sure, you may cycle through a number of projects. But a startup is categorically different. There is a chief vision involved with developing something much bigger than a project for someone else. And sure, there's some evolution that then occurs in between the two different models. But what I was able to do with 8-Bit, and really what I was what my responsibility was, coming up with that vision, creating that vision of, you know, there's a market that's available to us. There's some opportunities that we should explore, and we need to dedicate ourselves to it. This is not just a one-time project. This is an exploration into something much larger. You know, every startup's goal is eventually to relieve themselves of the startup title. There's no glory in being a startup. The ultimate goal is to transform into a business. Unfortunately, most startups never make it into a true business. And if you continually stay in a startup mode, you have actually failed. That is a failure because you can't evolve into a business. So if you're a startup 10 years later, you have failed. So we started up bootstrapped. It was just me and actually a guy named Chris. And Chris is someone you should definitely talk to. He is really quite brilliant. But we decided that there was what I consider a black swan event. in that terminology is used in a number of different contexts, but essentially it's a much larger socio-historical event that no one is aware of until it crashes on you. Something like Google or Twitter or the world wars, these large events that we have no idea but radically changes our entire worldviews on a very massive scale. And WordPress had been growing very rapidly. Blogging, of course, has been an incredible industry in many different ways. Now it's been diversified, and people make full-time incomes and have become millionaires off of blogging. And I had just begun to taste this. And I said, you know what? The issue that I see, and I was working at, I just left corporate America. I was a senior engineer for Dell, and then I became an executive at Fox for a while. And I said, you know what? After being at these Fortune 50 companies and leading their product development, one of the biggest things that they haven't got yet is blogging on a very, not even a macro level, but a very micro level. And there's got to be a way that we can transform that particular enterprise and, of course, profit from it. So that's where the genesis is. I believe that we can use an open source system that we can configure for our own needs and begin to engage some of the Fortune companies. There's this huge leap. Now, that is vastly different than a co-op, coming together, a bunch of guys saying, I think we should build a product for someone else because they're paying us really good money. This had a core vision that we wanted to influence the publishing industry at large, and we would do it first by developing content and then creating a WordPress theme. And just like any bootstrap startup, it can be very difficult. You have to juggle all the challenges of financials, all the challenges of time and project management, and all the partners trying to make sure they have can pay their mortgage. Out of the four partners, only one doesn't have kids. All the rest are married and have kids. I've got two myself. Chris has three. Tom has one. And so we all have growing families and needs. So for sure, the challenges of every time you bring someone on and making sure the line items meet in terms of finances, it's all that and a bag of chips.
Yeah. The mission statement there, the vision sounds super ambitious. Sounds super ambitious for the fact that you have just the standard theme, right? And to those who are watching that don't know, the standard theme is the theme developed by John and his team at 8-Bit. And when I talk to Tom, he says we only want to have the standard theme. That's our main focus for publishers. That's where we know we can grow in this vertical. Why or how did you come about that vision for having just one solid theme versus a studio press or like iThemes, who I interviewed yesterday, who will just make a multitude of themes, ranging from whatever, small business to a blogger? Why one set vision? Is that still the same, or are you changing that kind of that model as you go forward?
No, we had actually attempted and had begun to diversify because that was a model that had worked, and it's something that we experimented. We actually released a developer-centric WordPress theme, a live blogging-centric WordPress theme, a photographer-based WordPress theme. We were actually prototyping a Tumblr-based WordPress theme, and so we were beginning to diversify. And some of those business segments were actually profitable. They were actually bringing in some really great money. Maybe one of even the smaller ones was doing $2,000 to $3,000 a month with almost no support. But so we definitely did experiment and try that. But what we realized is that that's not the kind of company that we want to become. We don't want to be just another WordPress theme company because we had a much larger vision attached to the existence of our organization. And so we had to pare down. We said, you know what? We want to be different, and we want to act different, and we want to create a different model. We want to hyper-focus on one core product and be incredibly good at it instead of being mediocre at many different things. It's not that our competitors or like StudioPress and WooThemes and Elegant Themes and yada, yada, yada are mediocre. Those are great companies, and I personally know a lot of those founders. Those are great guys, but they don't share the same vision as we do. They don't want to focus all of their time and attention on one core product and theme and platform and then scale from there. And that's fine. We just have a different vision. It was a gamble for sure. Late 2011, we made that we made that decision. And then what's fascinating is that we were rewarded for that effort. Automattic contacted us a few months later and said, hey, your product is exceptional. We also love your particular stance on product development, design, and business philosophy. We should partner with you. And so it took about 3 or 4 months to actually finalize that relationship. But in early 2012, we became partners with Automattic, and we were able to showcase our product on WordPress.com. And I think we broke every sales record within the first 4 days. And so that was very exciting for us as a company, that, you know, the gamble that we had made to focus on one product had been recognized and rewarded. There's absolutely no guarantee when we made that decision to pare down and to actually sell off those assets. We actually found private buyers for them, that it would actually work out. But in entrepreneurship, in the startup economy, you have to make risks. There's nothing, I mean, the entire enterprise is a risk, but you have to continually challenge the organization to make big decisions and big plays. Because if you're going to survive and make an impact like you want to, then you can't do what everyone else is doing.
Sure. Where were you making your biggest strides in terms of selling the themes and finding profitability? Was that through WordPress.com, or is that through another marketplace like a ThemeForest, or is it just direct sales and SEO and blogging that you found your traffic?
Sales and blogging, for sure. You know, my efforts as a blogger and entrepreneur helped spur a lot of that traffic. I have an okay following, and so people have followed me for quite some time. And I, you know, lack of better words, I have a couple fanboys who apparently will buy everything that I build. I love the fact that they've been blessed with a lot of financial means, and they don't mind buying everything that I create. So I've just kind of generated that tribe, if you will, over time. And so those were some of our first customers. I actually had some great contacts with people who do have significant influence early on, which was a key component to our success. For example, Michael Hyatt, who was the CEO of Thomas Nelson Publishers, which is the sixth largest trade publishing company in the world. He became a personal client of mine, and then he started using Standard Theme. And now he's a professional author, speaker, writer. He has 2 New York Times bestsellers, and he's carried us all the way. And now, in fact, he's building his own WordPress theme, so that's really kind of cool. And then we did projects for like people like Chris Brogan. I can't even remember the blog name. Escape Velocity.
Escape Velocity. Yep.
Yeah. So he used Standard Theme for that, and we got a huge influx of sales and attention. Mashable wrote about us in 2011, I guess, is one of the top premium WordPress themes of 2011. So that was huge. And, you know, so we've been just riding that kind of organic wave of just building a good product, hopefully, you know, hoping that it would be recognized and receiving some of those just desserts. But of course we can't stop.
to the young entrepreneur, you know, backpack on their back, walking around WordCamp, looking at folks like us and the speakers and the automaticians and VIP and all these folks. I mean, what does it take to really, you know, a lot of folks, either end users and us designers, developers, say, well, a theme's a theme. You know, I should just download a free theme, $0, try it, you know, use it and hack it up the way I want. I mean, what do you think? What's your passion to make a premium theme? What makes it premium and better than anything else?
Yeah. I'm going to say something that's probably not wise from a business perspective, but I don't care. You know, the free theme marketplace is getting to be quite good. And that's a great thing because it keeps us premium guys on our toes. And, you know, the marketplace is so wide now that there are some free themes available that are actually, in fact, better than some paid, you know, quote-unquote premium themes. All that to say is I'm not entirely sure what premium means, but what I do know is that there's a layer of confidence that is created between the organization, the product, and the customer that is that financial relationship requires. You know, open source is great, but at the end of the day, consistency and trust are things that can be difficult to achieve, because someone who downloads a free theme, you never know who that, you know, the theme author is, and you don't know if they're going to be around for support when you need help. And premium, you know, theme authors know this. They know that support is really the lifeblood of their continued success. And so, you know, for new users or people who are considering dropping some coin for a premium theme, for sure, if you did enough due diligence, you would be able to find a free version of the premium theme out there, and probably be satisfied. But if you need support, if you need a little bit more of community, if you need someone, at least the, you know, the trust of an existing organization that is invested in you, then I think it's worth a couple bucks.
Yeah. And do you think we should be charging more for this, for these premium digital products, themes, plugins? Do you think we should be charging more than what the market's dictating?
That's a great question. You know, if anything, we should be charging less. And it's not because the work required to build a product company is lessened, or that it's not, you know, that the work that they do and invest the hundreds, if not thousands of hours we've invested in our product is not worth, you know, $60 or however much we're charging. It's that in the open source economy, we continually need to challenge the way that we build a business model, that we make a financial impact on our customers. And I think the industry at large has found a lockstep in pricing. They've discovered, you know, if you go at ThemeForest, you may not get superior quality, but you'll get something cheaper. If you go with an independent organization, you're going to pay a little bit more, but you have dedicated staff. And there's some pricing tiers that makes sense. But let's be honest, it's not innovative. You know, offering a product and a service, you know, a service model, that is not anything new. What WordPress and WordPress users and WordPress entrepreneurs need to be constantly thinking about is what models that exist, or the models that exist, are they satisfactory enough? And is it okay for me to just jump in to a fairly robust ecosystem and just do the same thing as everyone else? Or are there other ways that I can provide unique value that I can charge more for, perhaps, and that makes logical sense for the consumer? And so those are some of the things that we as an organization have the capacity to do, and which is namely why we only want to focus on one product. It's hard enough to build a business around multiple themes, because all your time is built into supporting all those themes and all the different updates, you know, and customer requirements for all these different market niches and verticals. But when you have one product, you actually have room to breathe in terms of innovation. You say, we have one core product, and we're going to consider everything that everyone else has considered, and then everything that no one has considered, and we have the freedom and flexibility to do that. So we have a product coming out this year that we have been prototyping heavily. I think we're in the third or fourth prototype that is going to be exceptionally unique to the WordPress space, and we're really, really excited about it. In fact, from our market study, we'll be the first company to offer this type of solution for our consumers. And so, yeah, I don't think you could do that with if we had a theme library.
Is this first breaking news, public knowledge kind of announcement here? Or?
It's a hosted solution,
okay,
for consumers, but it's going to be radically different than some of those other hosted solutions, which some of them are really good.
Nice. This transitions well into a question that I like to ask folks like you and I that are in this space, specifically with theme and plugin development.
Give you a little bit. I think you are the first for me to ever say it like that.
Okay.
Maybe it's. I'll have to talk to my guys after. John, what did you say?
What are your thoughts? Now you're closely tied to Automattic. You also write for Code Poets too, right?
Well, I had an interview there, and they did a feature her on WP Daily, and then they interviewed me. So that was, Krista did that. She was awesome. We didn't necessarily deserve that, but we got some buzz there.
Nice. The what are your thoughts? And I go back to my interview with Brian Castle, who runs RestaurantEngine.com, a place where end users can go and get pre-built restaurant sites hosted solution built on WordPress. We had the interview, and then the next day, WP.com announced that they were going to have this vertical of restaurant themes.
Yeah, I remember that.
Are we up against what? I'm just trying to put this in a politically good and a politically correct way. There's open source. There's the community of WordPress. Love, love, love. Hug, hug, hug. Share, share, share. Then there's .com. Do you think they're looking at us and using us as market research to then say, look what all these guys are doing. Let's go replicate that. And look at the verticals our community is building and profiting on. Well, let's do the same thing and then end up cutting us out. Not intentionally, but because they're trying to innovate for their users, but we're on the ground. We're the boots on the ground, and we're seeing innovation maybe before them because we can be more dynamic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, for sure. That tension does exist, but I think it's an incredibly healthy one.
Okay.
I think it is, in fact, our responsibility to give back to the mothership, so to speak, and to provide that market research for them. Now, those guys are intelligent. They have an incredible team that is constantly looking at opportunities. I have a call with Automax Biz Development, Paul, I cannot remember his last name, on Friday. In a couple of days, just talking about what we're doing at WP Daily and 8-Bit. And they're constantly looking for opportunities to invest capital. They made an investment. They actually made an acquisition last year with Code Garage. They made another acquisition, an investment, last year, unannounced yet. So they're looking at us, and we're creating great models for them, which is fantastic. You know, if we're all on the same page philosophically, which I believe we all are, it's the expansion and engagement with new users and adoption rates. Our goal is, collective goal is, let's get WordPress in as many hands as possible. Now, what does that mean for the private consultant? What does that mean for the premium WordPress, theme shop? What does that mean for the entrepreneur who's considering getting into marketplace? It means you have to be really certain about your product and your customer, because what's nice about the free market economy is that there will always be a consumer who will be interested in our product if we can create the right type of product. That's why we have 10,000 different types of automakers. That's why I drive a Toyota and a Honda, and you might drive a Ford Mustang and whatever you drive. I have a personal preference. That's how God made me, and that's, I don't, for God knows why, maybe I'm Asian and I want a Toyota and a Honda. But those are the automakers that I buy, and probably until I die, I won't buy any other type of car. I can't tell you why. It just is what it is. And there's nothing wrong with that. And so that's great. You have a personal preference, and you're going to buy it to different kind of car. And I think the same thing goes for the WordPress, that there will always be customers who are more interested in you, your company, and your product, God, for whatever reason. And if you can reach them, and if you can provide enough great value to them, then they'll stick with you. Mm-hmm. And that is the type of philosophy we're trying to create at 8-Bit. We love what we do. We love each other. We spend time with each other outside of business. Our wives are good friends with each other. Most of us go to the same church. And that's a big deal for us. And if we begin to organically attract those types of customers, fantastic. And they're going to stick with us long term, because we love this long term relationship. Will we be able to scale as fast as WooThemes or StudioPress? I mean, absolutely not.
Why do you think that? Why don't you think you can scale as fast as them? Is because the product range?
Yeah, we just won't be able to serve as many people as they can. They have a much larger entryway into their product line than we do. You know, it's really just, you know, your typical funnel effect. If you have an open market here, you know, and Brandon Gardner and WooThemes take these top slots, and then every other theme spot has a little spout that's into the much larger segment. We have a very small spout. The question, though, is retention. You know, in any business, especially our business in the open source model, the question is not about acquisition, it's about retention. Can you continue to retain a quality customer because you're creating continuous value? The reason why you and I and, you know, everyone else on the WordPress world have changed themes thousands of times is because we've become dissatisfied. But you have some people and some products which are so good that those users stick with them for the rest of their life. And that's what we're trying to do.
Do you think that retention is impacted because of human nature and they say, I'm just sick of this design, or it's 2-3 years later, it's time to redesign my business, so I go and grab a new theme? Or is it, there's a retention drop because of lack of support?
It could be all of that. It really depends on the company's ecosystem, their culture, and ultimately their model. If it's about, you know, a transaction, if they're all about a transactional model instead of a recurring model, then like, who cares who walks the door, and who cares who leaves? You know, it's like a hardware store. Come in, you know, get your screwdriver. I'm out. Next time I come, I'm getting a wrench. But it's entirely different if that person walks into the hardware store and says, "Hey, Nick, what's up? How are you doing? How's your family? You know, sorry you missed the barbecue last week. And by the way, I need a wrench today." You know, that's an entirely different relationship, and that's the type of relationship that our company is trying to create with our users. We have some long-standing, passionate fans who have stuck with us for years, and some of these people we have eventually met up in meetups, local meetups. We try to do that fairly often, and sure, they've paid only once, like years ago, but we have served them well, and they are still using our product. They are still talking about it. And we thank God for that, because they have provided an incredible marketing channel in industries and verticals that we could never really touch.
Yeah. Standard was my first premium theme when I was at my old company. When we were primarily a Drupal shop, and managed a bunch of Drupal developers and designers. And then it was like a couple of years before the big financial crash and stuff like that. But we started getting into WordPress towards the end. We needed a blog up for a customer. I think I was following Brogan at the time, and I think that's how I found Escape Velocity, and then I saw the standard theme. And you know, back then it was an awesome theme, and you know, it continues to.
That's kind of generous. I was the original product developer. I created it in 5 days. You're being very nice, but it was a piece of crap. I mean, what Tom brought to the table was pure, you know, quality engineering. It's funny because Tom and I went to the same school. I'm older than Tom, so I graduated earlier, and we didn't know each other at Georgia Tech. But you know, I kind of failed my way through computer science, while he got, like, you know, straight A's, and he's a purely engineering mind, and that's not me. I can develop products. I build products for large companies. But where I am now, that for sure, compared to Tom, I'm like an idiot. So
that, I mean, it brings you said something interesting early on about being an entrepreneur and how you kind of fell into it. You never really envisioned yourself to be, you know, to set out to be an entrepreneur, but you just couldn't sit still. You couldn't conform to other management or other leaders in your previous businesses and the directions that they would take it. You always wanted to have control. I think that's like one of the similar fibers that we all kind of share is as entrepreneurs. I remember working for Circuit City and just disagreeing with every management sales strategy and customer service strategy. This is all wrong. I you guys are doing it all wrong. It's this interesting fiber that we all share.
For sure. I mean, and I try to help. I think, you know, I have this interesting perspective where I call it the Joe entrepreneur. I think that there is an entrepreneur in all of us, and I think that is not so much a psychological or some unique attribute. I think it is also behavioral behavioral and biological. I think probably a more technical term is I think there is an anthropological entrepreneurship, which all of us have. And I studied some of this and saw in my graduate work. Because at the end of the day, or my core definition for entrepreneurship is really from Howard Stevenson, Harvard business guy, who said that entrepreneurship is the pursuit of opportunity without regard to resources currently controlled. And you have to say it a couple times before you really kind of like, huh, like, what does that really mean? But ever since, you know, you and I were created, we have been the pursuit of opportunity. The difference, though, is risk. Is are you willing to risk, you know, your current circumstances, your current context, so that you might achieve the opportunity? And for some people, it is, I identify the opportunity, but I don't have the wisdom, the wherewithal, the knowledge, the help to actually pursue it. And so, just like in your Circuit City job, just like in my, you know, other jobs, it's I identify opportunities. I have the gumption or resolve or whatever, or maybe mental issues to actually pursue that opportunity without regard to what I currently control. And so all that being said is I believe in the Joe entrepreneur. I believe in my neighbors right here in my neighborhood, people who go about their day. I got two real estate guys. I got two lawyers here. I've got a marketer and, you know, I've got an AutoCAD software developer right there. They all can identify opportunities, but the reason that I'm an entrepreneur, actually a functional entrepreneur, and they're not, is they haven't pursued it. And so I really try to help and train other people and coach other people to pursue those opportunities.
That's awesome. That's a great way. Great way to summarize the entrepreneur within. I got a couple other questions. I'm just trying to narrow it down to one of the last ones I want to ask. What's the one question that I ask, in talking about free themes, premium themes, do you think it's our duty to weed out the people who are doing things the wrong way intentionally to maximize profits? Your typical, I can build you a WordPress site for $500, use a free theme, charge somebody $500, send them on their way without any regard to scaling their business and getting them results, but taking care of WordPress, updating, doing it logically, using the right plugins. Do you think it's our duty to kind of weed out the folks that are just doing it wrong?
My answer to that is quite simple. I mean, it is not our duty. I have no issues with poorly written code, and thank goodness, because, you know, the code that I've written is pretty bad compared to some. And thank God the market didn't shun me away, because, you know, I didn't have grade A quality, you know, code and syntax and all that good stuff. What it does, though, is it, you know, I don't think, maybe my opinion perspective isn't globally shared, but I try to stay exceptionally pragmatic with the way that I run our company and the way that I lead our company. We simply have a limited amount of resources to do incredible work. And for sure, all of us are on a finite timeline because we're all going to die eventually at some point in life. And you know what? We simply don't have time to be policing other people's work. We have to invest all of our time into developing an incredible product and making sure that they don't leave. And nowhere in those two goals or metrics of success is, let's make sure that WooThemes is up to spec. Let's make sure that new kind of upstart is, you know, using the codex properly. Let's make sure that, you know, our competitor here is, you know, building responsive and native layouts just for their users. Like, who cares? Like, they're going to serve a particular market, and we just simply don't have time. And we, you know, at some point when we grow, we will definitely have some R&D, you know, an R&D department to look at what our competitors are doing. But man, there's no way that I am an interest at all, especially in the open source economy, to say, you know, we're the standard bearers, no pun intended, you know, for quality. Let's let the open source be open source. Let's have all different types of quality available. And let's, you know, as much as I hate it, let's trust the consumer to make the right decision. So,
incredible answer. I'm not gonna ask another question. we're gonna end on that in that segment. So let's jump in to the what's in your toolbox section. What piece of software besides WordPress or hardware or otherwise do you need to run your business? Like an Evernote, Google Docs? Do you have to have your iPad with you all the time? What is it that gets you running day to day?
You know, I keep going back to, I'm looking, if you look at my taskbar, which is really kind of, you know, that clues you into what you use. My taskbar includes three browsers. You know, I use Chrome primarily, Safari, and then Firefox in that order. I've got two writing applications, the OS X text edit application. Like, literally, I use that every single day. And then I use IA Writer, which is also kind of a focused writing application. It's a native OS X application. I have Coda, which I use for development. I really like Sketch, but I don't like the newer updated Sketch. I actually have the older version of Sketch. And if you're, you know, familiar with the Sketch Firestorm with Evernote, the acquisition, and then, of course, their crazy product development, the older Sketch was by far a better product. And so they re-released the older version, and I use that. I have iTunes. I'm the type of weird person where I will choose one song for the day, and I will loop that till the end of my work period. So you'll see my songs will have, you know, play counts into the thousands. Right now, you know, yesterday I've got Don't Stop the Party by Pitbull. And I just got that, like, you know, recently because the New Year's time drop, he was kind of the first guy on the stage. And I was like, ah, that's a really cool song, you know, and I got that yesterday, and I played that all yesterday, and so that count is up to 50. So I listened to that 50 times yesterday.
Oh, man.
And, you know, that's why I wear headphones, because I would drive my wife insane. But, you know, like, you know, Katy Perry, a bunch of her songs are on, like, I don't know, Last Friday Night is at 1725. I've listened to that, like, a month straight. And I don't know, I just create a rhythm. I don't even know why I'm trying, but I have a really weird, eclectic taste. So there's iTunes, and then finally, and actually that's it. Those are all the applications on my taskbar.
Awesome. Oh, that's a great roundup. Let's jump into the lightning round, where I ask you a series of quick questions, and you come back with a series of quick answers.
All right.
The one plugin that you cannot live without?
Jetpack at this time is absolutely essential. One, because it provides the stats, which are very valuable for an editor and for a site owner. And then I really like the native share features. We use that pretty much with everything. So Jetpack, for sure, is an instant install for me.
Awesome. Favorite WordPress or business book?
Oh man, Dig WP. I have both of their versions. They may even have, that's Chris Coyer, and gosh, I can't even remember his name, but I have both of those versions on my desk, digwp.com.
Awesome. A quote you live or run your business by?
For sure, one of the, I'll give you three, and these are all from my father. My father is the man that I respect the most. And I've never made a significant business decision without my father's counsel or advice. He gave me three, which I actually share on my blog at one point. Is first, never give up. And there's really no explanation for that. It's pretty obvious. Two, always have options. One of the things that I witnessed my father do in every business decision, he started from the line packaging Band-Aids, you know, in like the 1950s, and then eventually became the CEO of a Fortune company. So he spent like 37 years in one enterprise and just really knocked it out of the park. But he always had options, not just for his role within the organization, but for how he engaged with his family. And so there's a lot of implications for that, but always have options. And three, probably the one that pertains most to what we do at 8-Bit is it never hurts to ask. And I can't even tell you how significant that mantra is for an entrepreneur. I have raised more money. I've raised about $12 million in angel and venture capital. I've had five exits. So I love the startup world. But if you live your life as an entrepreneur, you say, you know what, like, screw it. It never hurts to ask. You will find yourselves in places relationally, with your business that you really, that is scary, because, you know, walking up to saying, you know, just never hurts to ask, never hurts to ask, and just saying, hey, would you give me money for my, and like, what harm really can come of you asking a question? Now, you know, you might be a little more tactful and tasteful with how you engage, but I saw my father leverage this time and time again. And I said, you know, that's a thing worth emulating.
It's awesome. The next question might actually, your answer to that might bleed over to the next question. The best business or career advice you've ever received?
I'm not sure if there's a succinct way of saying this, but I think one of the most important things that we do as individuals is we understand who we are as individuals, because everything we do will come out of our own image, self-understanding, and awareness of how we behave. And I really can't stress that enough. More damage has been done relationally and even from an enterprise perspective is simply because that person didn't know themselves well enough to make a good business decision. In fact, most of my, you know, I've been fired so many different times for so many different businesses. And it's simply because I didn't know myself. I didn't know myself well enough. I didn't know my strengths, my gifts. I wasn't aware of, or I didn't admit to the things that I'm severely poor at. You know, there are only a few things that I'm actually good at. And most of the other things I'm not even mediocre. I just simply suck at them. But how many people do you know, you know, and you could think of probably 10 right off the top of your head, are in roles, who have jobs that they were never made to do, you know, that you could say they're completely, they may even tell you if they're good friends, they're like, I hate my job, I hate what I'm doing. But for some reason, they're still there, you know. And so I think if this is business advice, if this is life advice, be on a constant quest to understand yourself. And you will go further and faster if you do.
It's beautiful. What if you had to switch to another CMS, what would it be and why?
Oh, man. My gut reaction from being a software developer is I would build my own.
Like, 99% of the developers say that. You know,
but that probably is a big, big cop-out. In terms of a publisher's perspective, I mean, Tumblr is amazing. You know, Tumblr as kind of a publishing system in terms of intuition for the end user. Ugh. I mean, let's be frank. We're looking at Tumblr and the way that they have built their product, and you know, we're going to steal some of their ideas because it really, really works. So Tumblr, I don't know if that's a CMS, but it's a publisher.
Yeah, it was an answer I received before. Who should I interview next?
Great question. I mentioned Chris on this, you know, on this podcast, on this video cast, who is one of my business partners and one of my best friends. I moved my family of four into his basement to help start this startup. So you know, I don't know if he would ever mention that, but you know, we did that for a year to make this work. Startup life is really tough. Chris would be definitely a good person to ask. There's some kind of luminaries that I'm sure you've pinged already, but and I'm sure there's some core development team automaticians that, I mean, I'm sure you've tried to get, you know, like a Mark Jake with, or you know, even like, you know, like even Matt himself. But yeah, that's a good question. I guess I would stick with just Chris for now, because nice. You've probably, you know, dropped a line to most people already.
Nice. What's the one question I didn't ask you that I should have?
You know, I don't know, but some of them, it's always valuable for, I think, people to know that I started my career in big business, you know, in the enterprise. I worked at three or four Fortune 50 companies as an engineer. I worked at Johnson & Johnson. I worked at Dell. I worked at Fox and News Corp. And, you know, I hated it. But it was what I was told to do as an engineer. It's what, you know, just kind of your typical, but it taught me a lot. And I think you can be an entrepreneur and be incredibly successful and create something, you know, out of the blue. But one of the things that I count as my blessings is that I understand from firsthand experience what some of the core customer needs are and what it takes to run an enterprise. And my connection with kind of boots on the ground consumers, especially when I worked at Dell, when I was constantly thinking about our consumers who are trying to purchase, you know, Inspirons versus Vostro versus whatever products they have now, that gave me incredible insight into areas of such as marketing, such as legal. I know, as boring as that sounds, Marcom, business development, product development, you know, project management. And I was able to get a very holistic perspective of these very large and successful companies. And it's weird telling, you know, a budding entrepreneur, I think you should go hold a desk job. Like, that's really counterintuitive because everyone's trying to leave the 9-to-5. But there's something incredibly valuable with being in the same place, a 9-to-5, and understanding that economy, because most of the world has a 9-to-5 job. And those are some of our consumers. And they don't have, like, you know, in terms of our context, these 9-to-5 employees, they're busy. They don't have time to blog during the, you know, regular business hours because they're working at a blue-collar, white-collar job. They get off. They got to travel. You know, maybe they have two-hour travel time. They get home. Their wife's, you know, upset. Their kids are needy. And then after dinner and after putting the kids down, it's like, ugh, finally, I get a moment to write. I get a moment to publish. And that's the vast majority of our customers. And if we don't make our product so effing intuitive for someone who's just had a full day and the last thing they really want to do is sit down and write something and hit the publish button, then we do them a grave disservice, you know, disservice in our product, and they shouldn't buy our product. And so those are some of the innovative things that we're thinking about holistically. What does our consumer look like? And most of our consumers and the people who have purchasing power are 9-to-5 employees. So anyway, I don't know if that's a
that's great. No, it's a great ending to the episode. So everyone, let's say thanks to John for doing this interview. If you want to get more awesome interviews like this, I urge you to go to mattreport.com/subscribe. John, thanks for doing this interview. Where can people find you on the web? Where can they go say thank you? Where can they buy your good stuff?
Well, easiest one is my landing page, because I've got links to everything else. It's just my name, J-O-H-N, John.do. And that'll be it.
Awesome. All right, everybody, go check out John.do. Say hi, say thanks, and check out their stuff. Thanks, guys.